morning. I love this congregation. As I pulled into the drive that comes down the street here, you have there's the sign that says dead end. But I'm looking at your bulletin this morning, and the only thing I could think is this church is no dead end. It's a very active and vibrant congregation. And so I'm thankful for that and thankful for the work that we've been able to do together through the years. We were locked out of Palau and Chuuk because of COVID vaccination requirements. And so that was our decision to come back stateside. And while we were able to continue working with Guam, but not Palau and Chuuk. And Guam has other men there who are able to do the work. And so I said to Tammy, well, they've got men here, honey. We're no longer needed as much in this place. And so it's time to make a move. And so this year, we're moving back stateside. And we have another trip to the islands coming up in November. And brethren, I just learned this past week that Palau and Chuuk have opened up. They have dropped all vaccination requirements. And so our trip to Guam this year, I was able to tack on Palau and Chuuk, and we're going to be able to go back in for the first time in 3 years, two and a half to 3 years, first time to be able to be back in there. So I'm so excited about that. But we have come back stateside, and so this is our final report. And it makes me very sad to say that, because it means I won't be able to come back here regularly and see you. Our habit has been to come back every 2 years and to report to you. So with that, let me get on into this year's report. And I just want you to know how thankful we are to you for helping us to be out there in the islands. I'm going to show several pictures and scroll through them, and these are baptisms through the years, and baptisms are important, brethren, but they're not the only thing. What we really strive to do is to make disciples, and so baptizing is a step along the way in making a disciple, but it's not the only thing, and so we would not baptize people who are not ready to be baptized. In fact, my philosophy is to study with them long before the baptism, and that gives them the best chance to become a disciple or to remain a disciple after the baptism. I'm going to say something, and it may sound a little funny. The best time to convert someone is before the baptism. And what I mean by that is, before the baptism, they're more open to learning. Some people take a philosophy of baptize them as quickly as you can, and then you can teach them more later. I understand that, but they're more open to learning before the baptism. And so we're going to talk about instrumental music. We're going to talk about the one church. It's good to do it before the baptism, because before the baptism, there's something that they've not done that they know they need to do. There's something that they're in a learning mode, and they're more open to learning before the baptism. Sometimes after the baptism, they say, well, this is what I was after, and so I'm done. And so I believe the best time to convert is before the baptism. Sometimes over in Chuuk, we would spend a lot of time on a subject that they struggle with, and that is whether or not we're under the Old Testament still anymore. And some of the brothers would have us study maybe 5 or 6 lessons to establish that we're no longer under the old law before they would be convinced. And I love that kind of a study, because they make us prove it by the scriptures. Those are the ones who really remain faithful after the baptism. And so we believe in studying with them before and after the baptism, and the best time to really get those lessons in, really help them to change their minds on subjects, is before the baptism. This gentleman, Kendi, is one who really made us work hard in the study. And this gentleman, Frog, F-R-O-G, that's his nickname, he also made us study long and hard before his baptism. And I love it, brethren, because he then became a preacher in the Lord's church and took the church up to his home area, which is Miari. It's a top of the mountain up there in Chuuk. These are volcanic islands. They're part of the Ring of Fire, the Johnny Cash song, okay, the Ring of Fire. And so they all have a mountain in the middle, and he lived up on top of the mountain. This is Marino Sammy, the man in front there, and Marino lives on Udon Island in Chuuk, and we were able to study with him, and then he was baptized. And then years later, after we had moved to Guam, he also moved to Guam, and we were giving him a ride to the worship services on Sundays. So let me take you over to Chuuk now, then we'll look at Palau a little bit, and then go on to some of the unique aspects of living in the islands. Chuuk is a third world state. It's a third world country, the Federated States of Micronesia, but we only focused on one state of that country, and that is Chuuk, and that's a set of islands. The people live in shacks like this, really outside of the town area, and they are somewhat protected from the typhoons. Typhoon's the same as a hurricane. It's just over there called a typhoon. And the typhoons usually start in Chuuk and then arch up a certain path, and they hit Palau and Saipan and then the Philippines. And so when you see one, you'll see it. You'll see that kind of a start. But sometimes the typhoons will hit Chuuk, and brethren, it's devastating when they do because the housing just can't survive it. So the tin and the plywood walls will get blown away, and then after the typhoon, they just go start collecting plywood and tin that's laying on the ground and rebuild their house as best they can. This is how they'll do laundry, and she's washing a pot right here. And they'll cook this way also. They don't cook inside the house because that brings in too much heat. It's the islands, and so there's already a lot of heat, just like here in Florida. And so they'll do the cooking outside just on a little fire that they on firewood with some rocks around it. So this family is particularly blessed because they have running water. You see that pipe there? That pipe is running up on the mountain, and there's a cave in the mountain. They've taken that PVC pipe and shoved it down into a spring that's there inside the cave, and so they have running water. Now, it's not clean water. I don't think you could even boil it enough to be safe, but they'll wash dishes with it, do laundry with it, and they have running water. So what a blessing. Other people have to go to a well and carry their water, sometimes half a mile back home, sometimes further, and so it can be a real blessing to have a water source like that. Here's how the brethren will get to the worship services. They'll pile into this truck, and brethren, if you know anything about the trucks, this is far beyond this truck's weight limit, and being a third world country, the roads are rough, a lot of potholes, and so it just won't work. They're going to wear out the shocks and struts on this truck very quickly. Well, they don't think about that. They just get in the truck and go, and when it breaks, well, they'll fix it, okay? So it's good. Now we're going to go over to Palau, and this is inside our home in Palau. Where Chuuk was a third world country, Palau is more second world. Palau is a country of 18,000 people, so very small. And that it's second world, what that means is there's more reliability in the water and in the power. And so even in Palau, it would still go out regularly on us, but not like it does over in Chuuk. We feed the brethren when they come over, maybe for a Wednesday night Bible study, maybe we'll have a Friday night get together, and it's always expected there's going to be food. It's part of the island culture. And so, brethren, we would have a crock pot that's full of some kind of a stew or soup, and then there'll be a large pot of rice, and they have a dedicated rice cooker. So we got a large rice cooker so we could feed the brethren all at once. And they'll take the stew and pour it over the rice. And the islanders want rice at every meal. There has to be rice at every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So on this occasion, we had them over, and I said, Tammy, we're going to do it American style. We're not going to do rice. We're going to do rolls, okay? And it'll be good for them to see a different culture, see how we do it over stateside. And so we did, and brethren, they didn't know what to do. They had their rolls on their plate that we put on their plate, and then they didn't know where to put the stew, right? And so we have bowls for them to put the stew, but they don't eat it straight like that. They need rice, so it was a disaster. They really just sat there looking at their plates, right? So I told Tammy, last time, we will not do that again. And so that's a part of island culture. Here we have a BAI, B-A-I. It is a leading men's meeting house from ancient days, and the Palauans are interested in maintaining their culture, holding on to it, and rightfully they should. Each of these island states or island countries have their own culture, and you'd think that there'd be a lot more overlap, but there's not, brethren. They have varying stories, varying fables, varying languages, and so there's really not a lot of overlap. And here they have where the chiefs of the village would meet in order to make village decisions. And they're beautiful buildings, and they maintain them and still build them. They're respectful places, and so the young people don't go in here and trash the place. That would be they'd get in a lot of trouble for doing something like that. And so those are, that's Palau and Chuuk. And now let me talk about the storms a little bit. We had regular storms. We always came and reported during the fall of the year, and that is the time when the storms would hit, so we missed most of the storms. There was one time in Saipan, we were there, and the storm hit, and water was coming in all sides, all four sides of the door. You could see it. You could see water streaming in and just flooding the floor. And Tammy said, well, what do we do? And I said, well, I don't know what we're going to do. We just let it flood, then we'll clean it up afterwards. It's one of the reasons they have tile floors instead of carpeted floors, right? So just move the rugs out of the way, and then you'll deal with the water later. The church in Saipan, it lifted up the roof, one of the storms, blew the wall in, and then let the roof back down. And so Saipan was able to build another building after that, so a good blessing. Here's my office in Palau. It's a 40-foot shipping container that we had moved our things over in, and it blew the roof off. We put a roof on it because otherwise those shipping containers are like ovens, and so that was one of the results of it. Here we have the Palau church building sign was blown down. There was just this past week a storm that hit Guam, and the storms are huge. So even in Palau, they're getting a lot of wind and rain, and this blown down sign was from years ago, but it just blew down again because of the storm that hit Guam. So we've got to go and fix that also. Here we have a storm in Saipan, and it blew this tree over onto this car. I want to zoom in on the sign for you. Not responsible for theft or damage to vehicles. Oh, they parked in the wrong parking spot on that day, brethren. That's right. And then this is not a typhoon, not a storm. It is an ash cloud. One of the islands there in the Northern Mariana Islands, Guam and then Saipan up north, you have a string of islands, most of them not inhabited, and one of them has an active volcano. It erupted while we were there, and it sent ash into the whatever upper atmosphere that it did not come down on us, but it passed over us. And so that's just an ash cloud. So those are good things. Let me tell you about the church in Palau before we were able to have a building built. The Palauans hire the Filipinos to come over from the Philippines. And brethren, they don't pay enough. And so it's hard living, it's hard money for the Filipinos, but they can't find jobs in the Philippines. And so the pay in the Philippines has plummeted, and there's just, you can't find a job, and if you can find one, then the employer has learned that jobs are so scarce they can pay very little. And so just not enough money in the Philippines. So they'll come to a place like Palau, even though the pay is lower than what it should be. Still, it's higher than in the Philippines. So they'll come over. And brethren, the Palauans, in addition to not paying enough, they'll say, well, your housing is part of your salary. And then they'll provide housing that is low. And so it'll be tin roof with plywood walls. And even though they've painted it, that plywood just wears out after a few years and it gets very dingy. It absorbs the moisture that's in the air. And so then the Palauans will tell the Filipinos, well, it's your job to maintain this place. And you, if anything breaks or a storm hits, well, then you have to fix it. And so we were meeting on one of these workers' barracks. We were meeting on the porch of one of these workers' barracks. And so, brethren, just lowly. It's just lowly. They have one light bulb, as you can see there, and then inside the rooms there'll be fans, and that's the workers' barracks. There'll be a gap in the wall where the wall meets the roof. There'll be a gap right there. And so, really, they have to make it livable for themselves. So for the church to be meeting on the porch of one of these places, brethren, it's challenging. We very rarely had a Palauan who would be willing to come to this place and worship, and very rarely, even some of the Filipinos would not want to come there. So one night, the lights went out, and the flying cockroaches swarmed. It sounded like 10 mini helicopters taking off all at once, yeah? So I said to myself, just freeze and don't move, and that's your best chance of not getting hit. And it almost worked, right? But when that occurred, I knew that we had to find another place to worship. Land in the islands is very expensive because there's not enough to go around. They won't let foreigners own land. Only the Palauans can own the land. And so if you have a building that's for rent, then it's expensive. Back in this day when we were looking to rent a place, a small little shack was $400 a month. And one of the ways that we work with the island churches is we don't put them on American support. And so whatever this group of people has in their contribution, That's what the church is going to live on. All they really have to have is enough to buy the bread and the grape juice. And that otherwise they can meet in a home or outside or something like that. So $400 a month for this group is not doable at all. And so we said, well, what are we going to do? Well, we found a piece of land that the government was willing to do something that I don't know if they'd ever done before. It smacks of providence the way that it came together. And that is, the government has land that the Palauans can lease, but foreigners cannot lease. It's only for the Palauans so that they can have affordable land. And this lady, this Palauan lady, had a teenage son and no income, not able to work. And the government took pity on her and did us a favor because we're a church. We're a do-good institution, so they want to encourage that. And they let us get a three-way contract between us, the government, and this lady to lease this piece of land. I'm going to say it's a 30th of the value of renting this piece of land. And so we did. And with a 50-year contract, they let us set the term. And we did a 50-year contract. And so then we were able to build a church building. We had a brother in Alabama who donated a church building, sent it over in a shipping container. I asked if he could give us the shipping container too, and so he did. And we used that for a while for storage and then eventually sold it. But we were able to build this church building. And so now the church in Palau has a great building, and the location, it's perfect. It is in a residential district that's right next to a commercial district, right next to the main road of Palau. You can see the building from the main road, and it just couldn't be better. And so we're so thankful for that. Okay, let's talk about food for a little while. We moved over to the islands, and food is important to me. It's one of the reasons I like to travel. I'm not saying I'm a foodie because I don't know that much about it, but I like good food, right? And so when we go traveling, one of the things I want to do is food. And some people will say, well, how are you going to go to the islands? There's not good food there. There's some. We did have to get used to boxed milk, and so that was different. Regular milk that's flown in on the airplane will be $8 to $12 a gallon, but the boxed milk is what everybody drinks. So this is octopus casserole from Saipan. Next time y'all have a potluck, I need a volunteer for make the octopus casserole, okay? These, let me let you look at it for a minute before I tell you what they are. They are bananas, a different variety. The Palauans are used to eating them, and so they don't upset their stomachs, but if you were to go over and to try this banana, if you ate the whole one, your stomach would be very, very upset. It has to take some getting used to. And then these are wonderful. They are calamansi lemons out of the Philippines. So if you ever go to an Asian supermarket and you want a better lemon than these yellow ones we have here, get some calamansi lemons. They are great for your iced tea or whatever you want to do. So then we come to my wife's favorite dessert, Halo Halo. This is from the Philippines and with the Japanese influences in how it started. It's crushed ice with sweetened condensed milk poured over the top, a scoop of ice cream on top, and then whatever additions you want to add to it. You'll see in the very front here the little white pods. Those are beans. And in Japan, beans are often a dessert. They'll put sugar with them, and you can buy a little pancake-type item, and it'll have bean paste in the inside, and it's considered a dessert. So this is Halo Halo. And then we have bat soup. So I mentioned earlier that the Palauans want to hold on to their ancestry, hold on to their culture, and this is part of doing that. They'll make bat soup, and this is from a restaurant. This is not just a home cook kind of thing. There's a restaurant in the center of Koror, Palau called The Penthouse, and they've got frozen bats in the back, and you go in and order bat soup, and they'll make it. And so, brethren, this is how it's served. This is straight as it came. And you say, well, it's still got the wings on it. They serve it with the wings. You say, well, it's still got the fur on it. They serve it with the fur, okay? And so you just like a chicken, you just pull apart what it and get to the meat on the inside, and that's bat soup. But they want to keep that. They want to keep that because it's part of their ancestry, right? And part of their culture. When we moved into Palau, the first night we were in our rented house, there were men outside with a gun. And I didn't know what they were doing at the time. And they were shooting bats. We had a large mango tree next to our property, and they were shooting bats to make bat soup. So Those are some good things. If you want to have come over to the islands, you can have some of those good things. But now let me tell you about some of the spiritual things happening in Guam and that we're looking to take into Palau and Chuuk as we go in November. And maybe you've heard of Rob Whitaker's work with House to House, Heart to Heart. They have a school of evangelism. And brethren, we in the Churches of Christ have struggled with evangelism for the last several decades. Every once in a while, you'll hear of somebody who's doing something that's effective, and usually just the reports are one guy who happens to be charismatic and a good salesman, he's having success in evangelism. But because those things are required, it's few people who were able to be very successful with it. In the last several years, we're seeing more congregations have success. But what Rob Whitaker is doing is very effective and very good. And the churches who are following his principles are growing by 20% per year. And that's the truth. They have to have somebody in the congregation who pushes it and promotes it. But my lifetime, I've never seen anything as effective and as strong. The closest thing was back in the 80s when programs like this, Back to the Bible, were going. Do you remember that? And there was Open Bible Study and a few others at the same time. Churches would have classes and teach how to use these and see some good results from them. Well, it died off. And here we are today. And so it's always interesting to me whenever we have any success in evangelism, and I want to learn about it, and I want to copy it. And so we went to two of Rob's seminars and took those principles back to Guam, and that's what I want to tell you about now. You know, the thing is, it's different now than in the 80s. The truth is, these Back to the Bible studies are more effective now than they were in the 80s. Brethren, I think that the United States is very open spiritually today. In fact, I'll say that it's more open now than it ever has been in my lifetime, more so than in the 80s. Now, it's misguided. A lot of people's spirituality is based on memes on Facebook, okay? Or maybe it's based on a denomination that they grew up in. But brethren, there's more spiritual interest. Yoga has a spiritual aspect to it. It's Hinduism. People don't realize it's Hinduism, but they want to do yoga because they want the spiritual aspect of it. That to them, it's more metaphysical and earthy than it is anything else. My wife does yoga, but not the spiritual aspect of it. We see spiritual interest in Amazon, even. People will go to Amazon and buy crystals for spiritual healing and set them up around their house. So there's spiritual interest today, but there's some things that people don't want. Number one, they usually don't want organized religion, okay, because they see problems in organized religion and issues and fighting and judgment and rules in organized religion, so they turn away from that. Brethren, I can understand that. Do you understand that? If I was not a member of the Lord's church and I looked at organized religion overall, I'd say no thank you. That would not work for me. So I get where they're coming from. Another thing that people don't want is to be evangelized. It's okay to talk about spiritual things. It's okay to talk about the Bible, but they don't want to feel like they're going to become a number for that person who's evangelizing them, a mark on the chalkboard for someone they brought to church. They don't want to be evangelized. But there's spiritual interest, yeah? So how can we capitalize on that? Well, these books do that in a wonderful way. What they do is give a Bible verse and then ask a question. So it's very, very simple. You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Jesus says the truth will make you free. And that's what Back to the Bible is. There's three lessons, and it walks through all of your Bible teaching for bringing them to the Lord in this kind of a way. And so it's very effective. You know, today, unlike the 80s, people really don't know their Bibles. We would say that's true in the 80s, brethren, for the general population, but it's really true today because the denominational preachers don't teach from the Bible. People will go through these booklets, and at the end of book one, it talks about that we're not under the Old Testament, but under the New Testament, and people get mad. They don't get mad when it comes to talking about the one church or instrumental music. We in the Churches of Christ think that's what's going to happen. We think, oh, they're going to study this, I'm going to read this, and then they're going to get mad at me and storm out of the house and slam the door. No, that's not where they get mad. They get mad at the Old Testament, New Testament, because they get mad at their preacher for not having told them this before. They'll say, I didn't know that. This is clearly a basic Bible doctrine, and I didn't know that. How could I have been in my denomination for 15 or 20 years and not have known this? So, brethren, it's eye-opening. I'm sorry to say that it's novel today to get people into the Bible. They're just not there. And, brethren, that opens the door wide for me and for you in doing these studies. Just as soon as we start these studies and they see what it is and that everything is coming straight out of the Bible, they love it. It's a breath of fresh air to them. The first lesson of Back to the Bible talks about following the Bible only and that we're not under the Old Testament, New Testament. So it's interest-getting. People love that message. We're going to follow the Bible only. Because the problem with organized religion is everybody has all of these rules and their men's council has set these rules and it's hard to follow and keep up with and know what's right and what's wrong and what's in the Bible and what isn't. But when we say Bible only, they say, yes, please. Because it's simpler and it's easier. And so if you can just get them started in Back to the Bible number one, the interest is caught. And they'll agree to numbers 2 and 3 and go through the lesson. Brethren, Rob Whitaker made a statement in his seminar that I couldn't believe. He said if people go through all three of the Back to the Bibles and they finish them, there's a 90% success rate in them getting baptized. I said, yeah, right. I'm in the business, right, as it were. And I said, if I had anything that was 50% effective, I'd sell the farm and buy it. Nothing is 90% effective. And so, brethren, I laughed at him saying that inside myself. And then we took it back to Guam, and I presented it to the congregation there, and the congregation used it. And I can tell you that it was not 90% effective in bringing people to the Lord. It was 100% effective. We had 12 baptisms in Guam in 2022 for a church of 50 people, okay? And so, brethren, that's wonderful. I could not believe it. I couldn't believe it. But the reason, say, well, why is that? How is that? How can it work so well? Because it's straight out of the Bible. And that's novel today. You know, I lost my train of thought. So just going through those lessons brings people to the Lord, and it's amazing and it's surprising that it works so well, but it certainly does. We had to bring in pews from the classroom over into the auditorium, and I moved my family up to make room for people. I moved my family up to the repentance pew. I said, this is where we're sitting now, okay? And it was wonderful and good. And brethren, a breath of fresh air for the work of the Lord and doing evangelism. And so you say, well, one of the challenges with this, so how can it be so easy? The hard part is not doing the Bible study. It's just walking through the booklets and walking through the verses, and everything is established by the verses. I thought it was what I was going to say a minute ago. The reason, one of the reasons that it is so effective is because people have that spiritual interest, and brethren, the Bible and God still trump everything else. So they've got the Facebook memes, and they've got the yoga, and they've got the metaphysical thing, buy the rocks on Amazon. Okay, but you know what? They really believe that God is bigger than all of those things, and that the Bible comes from God. In surveys, 89% of Americans believe in God. I think it's 76% claim to be Christian, and so the Bible still trumps. Now, if you sit around at a party and people are talking about things, maybe they'll say something different, but you sit down at the dining room table and open the Bible, they believe what they read. And so the hard part is not doing the Bible study. The harder part is getting the Bible study. So, well, they don't want to be evangelized. They don't want organized religion, so what do we do? Here's a great thing to say, a great phrase to get a Bible study. Whenever you're talking with someone, do you know very much about the Church of Christ? And they'll say, no. And so, well, we've got these little booklets that tell about it from the Bible. Why don't you come over Tuesday night, we'll get together. And by that time, maybe you've been out to eat with them 2 or 3 times to help them to be able to trust in you. But brethren, that works. It doesn't smack of evangelism, and it doesn't smack of organized religion. Do you know very much about the Church of Christ? No. Well, we've got these little booklets that tell about it from the Bible. You come over Tuesday night. That is a great way to get a Bible study. It's not offensive. It's not pushy. Don't give me pushy ever in any circumstance. But when it comes to just studying the Bible together, looking what the Bible says, okay, they're open to that. They're willing to do that. So here we have a young lady who is a member of the Navy there in Guam, and she had questions about the Bible. She connected with one of our members on Facebook over a health-related post, and then we started studying together, going out to eat, always eat with them. It breaks the ice, and she was then ready, after we finished the third booklet, she had two concerns. She grew up in a denomination. Now, this is Guam, brethren, but she's an American, so we're talking about American things here. And she had two holdbacks, and one was on instrumental music. She had grown up with it, and she really didn't think that that was wrong, and the other was on baptism. She didn't want to say that baptism was necessary for salvation. And so, brethren, we wouldn't baptize her. No, we wouldn't do that. I preached a sermon on baptism. I thought, well, I'm gonna convince her, because baptism really is a simple subject if you just look at the verses. So I made a sermon, had five questions on baptism and the Bible's answer. And I prepared it and got up in the pulpit, and she wasn't there that day. How about that? Yeah, that's how it always goes, right? So we recorded it, and I sent it to her, and she listened to it. And then she called us over to the house. She said, I need to be baptized. And I said, you know, we can't do that. You've got to understand that baptism, and I'm talking gently, but you've got to know that baptism is for the remission of sins. It's the point when our sins are washed away. And she, with tears in her eyes, she said, I need to be baptized. And so then I knew that she had it. There was another lady who was dating somebody in the congregation. And brethren, that's always a dangerous thing, because when they break up, she's gone, right? And so we did the Bible studies, but did not include her boyfriend, and just their relationship was on again, off again. It was one of the rockiest relationships ever. And now they're broken up. But during that time, it was on again, off again. When it was off, the Bible studies were off. So I said to Tammy, well, let's just go eat with her and have some time together to keep the door open. And that worked. When they were dating again, then we continued the studies. Eventually, it took several months, but we got through booklet number three. And when we got through booklet number three, she was baptized. The booklets work. Let me share with you now a foolproof plan for baptizing people. And you say, Joey, there's no such thing. I used to think that too. But this that I'm going to tell you is a way that will baptize people in probably any place in the United States and probably any place in the world. And that is, if we think about the number of people that we can think about that you know who have cancer, how many people could we come up with in this congregation of people who have cancer? And then you go to that person, you say, I'm so sorry about what you're struggling with. Can I put you on our church's prayer list? And brethren, they'll say yes, because it's very, very important to them. Someone who is having a life-threatening illness or even just a severe illness out in the world, they'll take every prayer they can get, so they'll say yes. And then you say, well, our church sends cards, so can I get your address? They're going to want to send you a card, and you get their address. And then the church sends cards. Now, there are many card efforts going on in our brotherhood today that are not effective like this. Sometimes a whole church will sign one card and send it, or sometimes once a month on Wednesday night they'll have a card class and people... It's not like that. We're looking to do a card flood to their mailbox. So maybe 60 cards we want to send to their mailbox, and they're mailed systematically by whoever's leading the program. So maybe five or six a day over the course of 2 weeks, right? And brethren, that means the world to the people who are very sick. And they reread those cards, and they keep those cards, and they count those cards. There's a gentleman in Guam who, his name is Roy, and he's a self-professed cranky old man. And yeah, he told me, he knew I was a preacher when I met him and started visiting him. And he told me from the onset, he said, I don't want to talk about religion. I'm not being rude, and I tend to have a harsh manner. If I ever offend you, I'm sorry, but I don't want to talk about religion. I think everybody's fine. I'm fine. You're fine. Everything's good. So that was his opening remarks, okay? But Roy got cancer, and we put him on our church's prayer list, and we started sending him cards. And so I called him up one day, and he said, your church is sending me cards. I said, is that right? I was the one mailing them. I knew they were coming. And so I said, is that right? He said, yeah. I said, how many have you received? He said, 19. He didn't hesitate, not a second, to tell me the number that he had received, because he had counted them. And brethren, it means a lot to people. You know, when they get all of those cards, they can't believe that so many people are thinking about them and caring about them And every day they go to the mailbox. Once it starts up and they see the pattern, every day they go to the mailbox, really hoping that there will be cards that day. People don't want to organize religion. They've seen ugliness about that. People don't want to be evangelized. They've seen pressure about that. But people think that there are churches that are friendly and nice and care about people and don't have drama. They think that they're out there. They just don't know where or how to get in contact with one and how much they want to be involved with one. But brethren, when they receive those cards, you know what they say? They say, "This is the kind of church I've been looking for. This is what I've been wanting." And then you don't think it's easy to go with David or one of the elders, go visit them in their home, and the first thing out of their mouth is going to be, "I can't believe your church has sent me so many cards. It means the world to me." They know that each of those cards represents at least one prayer that has gone up on their behalf, and they love it desperately. And so you go visit them, and they say, "I thank you so much for these cards." And you go, "It's our pleasure. How are you doing? How are the treatments going?" And then, do you know very much about the Church of Christ? "No." "Well, we've got these little booklets that talk about it from the Bible. Won't we come over Tuesday night?" "Yes." And then if they'll finish book number 3, 90% chance they'll be baptized. Brethren, it works. That's a foolproof plan for evangelism. And that's what helped us to get the 12 baptisms there in Guam last year. And so it's exciting, and we can use that. This is Roy. Roy, in our church building, the man who hates religion, okay, and against even talking about it, sitting inside our church building. We haven't baptized him yet. That's one of my goals for November, okay? But the door was widely opened because of the cards that were sent. Well, I am out of time, but I would like to take just a few minutes and tell you about the Gospel Broadcasting Network. And brethren, it is a TV channel that really has adapted since then. You know, cable has died and everything is streaming now, and so Gospel Broadcasting Network has become streaming. You can access our shows just on demand, and of course, it's 100% free. Gospel Broadcasting Network doesn't sell anything. It exists only by free will donations from congregations and people. So it's nothing sold, and you never be asked for anything. We have an app where you can watch it on demand on the app, and you can go to the website, gbntv.org. There's a Roku channel. What I want to do in just a couple of minutes that I have is tell you about the new programming. This is Cliff Goodwin doing Preaching the Gospel, and he is representing to us an older style of show, and that is a talking head. You've got one person talking to two or three cameras. We have tons of this material, and it's great, wonderful material. But we're also doing things that are more of a modern approach where we can reach the younger generations, people under 30. So here you have a series called Drawn to God, and instead of a talking head, it's narrated. And so here what is being narrated is drawn on the screen, and you have, "Why are there so many churches?" You say, "Well, it's animated. It's for children." No, it's for adults. Yes, that's right. And so, very popular. Why do I need to be rebaptized? We have people who are in denominations who watch that. They see that their baptism doesn't match up with the scriptures. And remember, people don't know the Bible anymore, so this is eye-opening to them. And so they'll write into GBN, and we set up Bible studies with them. We connect them with local preachers wherever they are. They do the Bible study, and they're baptized. That happens all the time. It's regular. So that's Drawn to God. This is The Authentic Christian. Do you listen to podcasts? Podcasts are, you could draw a line in the age of our population, those who listen to podcasts and those who don't listen to podcasts, okay, right? Well, podcasts are a very popular way for people to get their information today. So this show is done podcast style. Instead of a talking head, it's men with microphones and headphones on. And it's very popular. Aaron Gallagher does a fantastic job, one of our very popular programs. And then this is the best one. This is Answering the Air. A young man in a youth group came to Don Blackwell, and he said, "My friends were asking me about this YouTube video. They want me to watch it and respond to them, and I don't know what to say." Teenagers talking about the Bible, their spiritual interest in the world today. That I don't know what to say. It was on Once Saved, Always Saved. So Don said, "Well, we ought to do a show that addresses this YouTube teaching. You know, people go to YouTube for everything. How do I reupholster a church pew? YouTube, okay, anything. So when it comes to spiritual questions, where do they go? YouTube. So GBN has a YouTube channel. And what Don and Aaron do is they'll find one of these channels where you've got the spiritual teaching, and it's false teaching, of course, and they'll show 30 seconds to 1 minute of the clip and then answer it. And brethren, it's done very kindly. It's done very much on the up and up, very nobly, but it teaches the truth on subjects that people are dealing with today. These YouTubers make topics that people want to listen to because they want their following to come up, okay? Their account to rise. And so that is answering the air. A lot of the churches of Christ are using answering the air as their Wednesday night Bible class. And so it's a new, different kind of format, and it's absolutely current and relevant to today. So, brethren, those are the good things that I wanted to share with you. And there's my second bell. If you have any questions, then please feel free to ask me. And it has been a pleasure to be with you all through these years. Thank you much.